divim,
divim,
of the personality of Godhead. Mayam, the illusory energy. Upasritya,
taking shelter of.
Prasuptaha,
while asleep.
Or dreaming while asleep.
Iva,
like.
Vinadrik,
having separated vision. Tapke,
I lamented.
Dvitiye,
in the illusory energy.
Api,
although.
Asati,
temporary.
Vratri,
brother.
Vratrivya,
enemy.
Rit,
within the heart.
Ruja,
by lamentation.
So, translation.
Dhruva Maharaj lamented, I was under the influence of the illusory energy, being ignorant of the actual facts. I was sleeping on her lap. Under a vision of duality, I saw my brother as my enemy. And falsely, I lamented within my heart, thinking, they are my enemies. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Ki Jai. Real knowledge is revealed to a devotee only when he comes to the right conclusion about life by the grace of the Lord. Our creation of friends and enemies within this material world is something like dreaming at night. In dreams, we create so many things out of various impressions in the subconscious mind, but all such creations are simply temporary and unreal. In the same way, although apparently we are awake in material life because we have no information of the soul and the super soul, we create many friends and enemies simply out of imagination. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that within this material world or material consciousness, good and bad are the same. The distinction between good and bad is simply a mental concoction. The actual fact is that all living entities are sons of God or byproducts of His marginal energy. Because of our being contaminated by the modes of material nature, we distinguish one spiritual spark from another. That is also another kind of dreaming. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that those who are actually learned do not make any distinction between a learned scholar, a Brahmin, an elephant, a dog, and a chandala. They do not see in terms of the external body, rather they see the person as spirit soul. By higher understanding, one can know that the material body is nothing but a combination of the five material elements. In that sense, also, the bodily construction of a human being and that of a demigod are one and the same. From the spiritual point of view, we are all spiritual sparks, parts and parcels of the Supreme Spirit God. Either materially or spiritually, we are basically one. But we make friends and enemies as dictated by the illusory energy. Dhruva Maharaj therefore said, Dhyavim Mayam Upasrucha. The cause of his bewilderment was his association with the illusory material energy. So, Dayavim Mayam Upasrucha Prasupta Hiva Vinatrik Atapye Dvitiye Pyasati Vratri Vratri Yarit Druja. So, Om Gana Timananda Shah Gananjana Shvakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, this whole concept of friends and enemies is based upon who pleases me and who displeases me. In other words, someone who gives me sense gratification, they're my friend. and someone who opposes my sense gratification or gives me pain, they're my enemy. So this is the distinction. And the demons, generally, they like to think like this. For example, Krishna. For example, in the school of Prahlad Maharaj, the school of Sandanamarka, the sons of the spiritual master of the demons, they were attempting to teach Prahlad Maharaj how to deal with enemies. It's very interesting, Shukracharya's sons. They said there's different methods when you have an enemy. You should all learn this. Like if you have an enemy, the first thing is sweet words. You got to praise them. Oh, my dear enemy. Oh, Jai Jagadish, you know, you're such a nice person. Oh, I love you. Or you say to the women, oh, you look 30 years younger than you actually are. That's the first way to pacify an enemy. Sweet words. And another way given by Sandanamarka is a bribe. You know, you give them some money. So, my dear enemy, here's some money. Will you be my friend? Actually, this works very well in India. Like, when sometimes we take the devotees on tours of India, Parikramas or different pilgrimages of India, and sometimes we are stopped in different places. They said, oh, you cannot take your bus here. It is prohibited. And then I say, here's 100 rupees. I said, oh yes, we will help you take your bus here. So that works very well. So that's called a bribe, or money, or whatever you want to call it. And one time I was in Europe, and there was some problem getting into some country because we didn't have any car insurance proper. You understand? We didn't have the car insurance. It wasn't done properly from one country to another. So we just slipped some money in the passport and said, can you let us in now? And the man, he wanted to avoid the cameras seeing the money in the passport. So he dropped the passport on the ground. He said, oh, I'm sorry I dropped your passport. That's called a bribe. Another way of dealing with enemies is you give them a high position. In other words, you are now in charge of the deity worship in the temple. And then they say, oh yeah, he's so nice to me. That's another way of dealing with enemies. Of course, not the deity worship, obviously. But let's say if you have someone in the supermarket, you know, who's your enemy, you just give him a position. Oh, you're in charge of the meat section. And that way you're sending your enemy to hell. Very nice. He thinks he's your friend, or you're his friend, and you're actually sending him to hell. So, and then another way is called a beta, which means divide and conquer. In other words, let's say we have two devotees. Let's say Arjuna and Jai Jagadish are enemies, you know, somehow or other. Then I'll go to Arjuna and say, Jai Jagadish said this about you. You know, he really hates you. You know, he doesn't say anything to your face. But behind your back, he says all these horrible things. Then I go to Jai Jagadish and say, Arjuna says all these things about you. You wouldn't know it. I mean, he makes believe he likes you, you know, as your son. You know, don't believe it. And this way, they fight with each other. And then you don't have to worry about anything. Because your two enemies kill each other. This is actually a practical situation for when you have people who hate you. So you should use that. Actually, the demigods use that too. There was that interesting story about Sunda and Upasunda. They were two demons who had been blessed by Lord Brahma that they could not be killed. And they were friends, they were brothers. They could not be killed except for by each other. So what happened is that there had to be a way to get them to fight with each other. Nobody could fight with them by themselves. So what happened is Lord Brahma and the demigods, especially Vishnu Karma, created this very beautiful girl that would get them to fight with each other over the girl. So this girl was called Tilottama, and she was so beautiful the other demigods grew extra eyes just to see her. And then she went to these two demons who happened to be drunk at the same time, and they fought with each other. and they killed each other. Also, Krishna employed this when he got rid of the Yadav dynasty. He understood nobody could kill the members of the Yadav dynasty, so they could just, he would make arrangements for them to fight with each other and kill each other. It's interesting, isn't it? How did he arrange? He got them all drunk. That's the problem with drinking. People start fighting. Prabhupada actually said a high-class person, when he drinks, he'll go to sleep. And a low-class person, he fights. So you should see whether you are high-class or low-class. So anyway, so this divide and conquer is there. And then the next one, next technique for taking care of enemies is the threat. You threaten them. Unless you do this, I'm going to kick you out. You're going to lose your job. And so that works sometimes. And then the final method is called argumentum ad baculum, which means the stick. You hit him. You beat him. So that, therefore, when you're in a political position, you have to first try the easy method before you start fighting with someone. And most politicians don't understand that. The first one, you know, basically is mediation. Anyway, that's practical. Even in ISKCON, sometimes we have these conflicts, so mediation should be employed, conflict resolution, everything like that, before you start beating up the other devotees. It's not really... It's interesting that people do have that tendency to escalate, to go to the highest level of conflict, which is, you know, fighting, rather than employ the other means. We see this sometimes on the upper levels of management in ISKCON, that immediately, you know, we see someone doing something bad, or we don't understand what someone's doing, or someone does something that we don't agree with, we demonize them, and we want to exclude them from the movement, kick them out, or something like that. So we as devotees should understand this. Okay. On the other hand, because if you're in a management position, you really have to sometimes think in terms of friends and enemies. I mean, it's just practical. So that, you know, there's management, which is Kshatriya stuff. And then there's Brahminical stuff, which is Yastu Sarvani Bhutani Atmana Ivanu Pashati Sarvaputeshu Chatmanam Tatoma Vigigupshate. That's from Isopanishad. And that verse says, one who sees everybody's part and parcel of Krishna doesn't hate anyone like that. So sometimes in management, you have to step down a little bit from the Brahminical platform. This, just to be practical. You know, like if a king has to conquer his enemies. Otherwise, it doesn't work. Just like in the battle of Kurukshetra, it was necessary for them to fight and to consider the Kuru dynasty, the Kurus, to be their enemies. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been able to carry out Krishna's service. But Prabhupada here, and Dhruva Maharaj, of course, is speaking on the platform of the Brahminical understanding. And the Brahminical understanding is basically to see Krishna everywhere and see everything in Krishna. That's Brahminical. As Krishna says in the Gita, for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost to him. So in other words, if someone does something to you, Krishna's arranged it. Basically, that's it. Like if someone comes up to you and yells at you, then you think, oh, Krishna's arranged it so I can become humble. And even you find that story in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam of Dharma the bull being beaten by the personality of Kali. His legs are cut off, basically. I understand they do that in Fiji too. They cut off the legs of the animals. The devotees were telling me of the cows sometimes, isn't it? Maybe not here in this in Mombasa, but it's happened in Suva or Nasori, right? Isn't that true? Cool.
Eight miles.
In 8 miles they do that. So don't go to Suva. So Suva is one step down. Don't listen to this in Suva. Anyway, so and then the next step is Australia down. The next step down is New Zealand. Anyway, so you're happy here. It's a nice village thing. The children are taken care of. It's just a nice environment. Anyway, so cutting the legs of the bull. So the bull's legs, of course, represent the four principles of religiosity: cleanliness, mercifulness, truthfulness, and austerity. So the bull's legs, Dharma the bull, he had three of his legs cut, and he was standing on one leg and urinating. And so Parikshit Maharaj comes, and Parikshit Maharaj is a good king, and he stops the whole thing, and he says to Dharma the bull, who has done this to you? And Dharma the bull, instead of considering Kali to be his enemy, he says, basically, it's very difficult to understand. In other words, he's pointing out that it's the action of Krishna's energy and ultimately Krishna's action. So, which is a very, very important point. That if something happens, you know, good, bad, insult, pain, we have to see Krishna behind it. And we have to understand, secondly, what is Krishna trying to say to us? Right? I mean, just like Prabhupada was put in a very difficult situation. For example, he was preaching in this place called Jhansi in India. Some of you may know this story. And he was preaching very, very nicely. He had this whole like temple that was previously built for some other purpose. And then all of a sudden, what happened is that the governor's wife decided to, Governor Munshi's wife, decided to turn it into a ladies' place. Now, you know, ladies are nice, but we don't want to turn the temple into a lady bhavan. Or even a man bhavan, you know. We want it to be for Krishna. It's for Krishna. So all of a sudden, probably it would be just like you have this temple here, and somehow or other, the whatever, mayor or Lambasa or something, decides his wife should take over the temple. And turn it into a place to sell saris or something like that. Is she Indian? The mayor is Indian? Or? Yeah, must be. Anyway, so that would, and then what would you do? It would be hellish, isn't it? All of a sudden we're chanting Hare Krishna, enjoying ourselves, and then all of a sudden it's a sari store, you know. They have, in Suva they have a sari store called the Saffron Store. As I went by it, I thought, oh, yes, for sannyasis, but devotees warned me it wasn't. It's for ladies' clothes. So, yeah, it's called the Saffron Store. Saffron means this color right here. So, anyway, so Prabhupada, when that happened to him, what did he do? He understood it was Krishna's plan. I mean, he wasn't happy about it. But he understood it was Krishna's plan. And what did he do? He understood Krishna was kicking him out for some higher purpose. Because had Prabhupada remained in Jhansi, we wouldn't be here. Had Prabhupada had success in India in the beginning days, you know, people just like became his disciples. They didn't because they were very attached to their families. Then we wouldn't be here. If Prabhupada's wife hadn't abused him, we wouldn't be here. Not to say all you ladies should abuse your husband. That was a plan specifically for Prabhupada. So all those things, you know, which are apparently, if Prabhupada's business hadn't gone bad, we wouldn't be here. Because Prabhupada was thinking originally of doing this business, you know, the chemical business. He was a chemist. That means drugs and everything like that. You know, he was good drugs. I mean, he was manufacturing different things. He had what's called Day's liniment and all sorts of different things that he had invented to cure different diseases. He was very expert. But his business went bankrupt. He lost everything. And Prabhupada was originally thinking, I'll make a lot of money and this way I'll spread the movement. That was Prabhupada's original plan. His plan all along was to preach. His plan was to preach out of his home. That didn't work. His plan was to preach in Jhansi. That didn't work. His plan was to make a lot of money and preach with the money and distribute books. That didn't work. And so the only thing that worked was coming to America. You know what I'm saying? And that worked really well. He got his visa, something called the P form, and his exit permit from India real quickly. I mean, usually for someone to get a visa to America from India is very hard. I mean, those devotees in India, no, they go to the embassy and they get refused. Unless they have millions of dollars, then they get refused. But Prabhupada got it like that. So it happened very easily. And then Prabhupada, of course, it wasn't so easy to get the boat ride over. He had to just sit outside of Sindhya Steamship Company, which is Sumati Maharaji's. She was in charge of the company. The lady was in charge of the steamship company. And he had to sit outside because he couldn't even see her. And he just sat on the steps for days until she came out. Prabhupada was so determined. He said, because they wouldn't let her see her. And then finally she came out and she agreed to see him. And then Prabhupada said, I want a ticket to America. And she said, you're going to die on the boat. And he said, no, I won't. And then he just got all those things together, which was basically impossible with no money. He had many cases of boats, but no money. And he got on the boat and then also had heart attacks on the way over, which is also Krishna's arrangement. And then, you know, so many troubles in America too, like people stole his tape recorder and his typewriter and everything. At one particular point, they broke into his room. And then he had to move to 26 Second Avenue. You know, originally he was in this flat and everything was stolen. So then he moved to 26 Second Avenue. At one point he was living with someone else who was taking drugs, and that person got so crazy that Prabhupada had to run out to save his life. The person was taking this thing called LSD. You know, and so all these unfortunate things happening. But it was all Krishna's plan, then Prabhupada moved to 26 Second Avenue, and then everything happened. Wow. And then later on, after the movement got started, there was some disturbance in America. Some people created, they became envious of Prabhupada. Some disciples even. They began, and this is in the Prabhupada Lilamrita. And Prabhupada got so disturbed, he said, well, I have to go back to India. He called for Srila Gurudev, Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He said, you know, come, take me back to India. These people, I can't stand them anymore, basically. And then Prabhupada went back to India, and it was Prabhupada's original plan just to stay in America and not go back to India. But then he went back to India and then developed this whole amazing movement in India. See, step by step, a lot of things are based upon apparently disturbing things, apparently people acting as enemies, apparent attacks, apparent bankruptcy, you know, unfortunate circumstances, and then, wow, it was all Krishna's plan, you know, because if things hadn't happened like that, you know, we wouldn't be here today, there wouldn't be like, literally, we have probably about 60 temples in India right now, numerous preaching centers, in Delhi alone. They have all these youth hostels where the students at these big prominent universities like IIT, Indian Institute of Technology, they actually live with the devotees and become devotees. You know, educated, PhD. I have one disciple in India who's a PhD in the Indian Institute of Technology. You've met him, Gokul? Praneshra? Yeah, very nice, humble devotee. Just from all these, and so there's like maybe 100 preaching centers for students all over India. And that's all because Prabhupada got disturbed with America and came back to India. Of course, later on he came back to America. He came to Fiji, you know, as we mentioned last night, made a stopover, told Vasudeva, you know, start a temple. Vasudeva started a temple. So Krishna was behind everything. Even though it appeared unfortunate. So that's really the same with all of us. That just like the Pandavas, all those things that happened to them appeared so unfortunate, isn't it? Imagine, you know, someone's your mother and someone's trying to kill your kids. You're in the same house. You know, the cousin brothers, they poison one of your sons. Fortunately, you know, he becomes stronger after the poison. You know, he was saying he was taken by the Nagas and they gave him Rasa Kundala And he became as strong as a million elephants after that. So in other words, it was an unfortunate thing, but it actually helped the Pandavas. Bhimsen's being poisoned helped the Pandavas. And even the Pandavas losing the gambling match and having to go to the forest like that in exile, that helped them too, because Arjuna was able to go and get more weapons at that time. Even when Arjuna, there's another story in the Mahabharata, the one time Arjuna intruded, the Pandavas had a deal, because they all married the same wife. Actually, it was good they all married the same wife, because that way it kept them all together. Sometimes you have brothers who marry different wives, and the wives drive them apart, isn't it? So the best way to keep brothers together is... No, we shouldn't do that. But yeah. So, yeah, because it's actually... The brothers usually stay together, but it's usually the wives that drive them apart, right? So, I had the same thing with my brother, too. You know, his wife won't let him see my mother. His wife won't let him see me. You know, his wife just controls him. Like a leash. You know, dog leash. So anyway, so the Pandavas, I mean, it was necessary for them to have one wife so they could still be united like that. So they made a deal. And the deal was, of course, Narada Muni encouraged them in this deal. In the Mahabharata, that story is there. That if any of them intruded when another brother was alone with Draupadi, he'd have to go into exile for so many years. So one time, and the weapons were kept with Yudhisthira. So what happened is one time someone attacked, was stealing cows, and the weapons were with Yudhisthira, and Arjuna had to intrude. And so he had to go into exile and take a vow of brahmachari life. So that, you know, such a horrible thing to happen, so right? But really, it was Krishna's plan. So what happened is that several things happened. First of all, he was bathing in the Ganges, and some lady, Ulupi, pulled him down. You know that story?
No.
Some of you may know that story. He was bathing, you know, the Ganges, and this Naga lady, Ulupi, pulled him down. He's trying to swim, and then pulled under the ground. He says, "I want to marry you." And then he says, "But I'm supposed to be a brahmachari." And then she makes another argument. She says, "Actually, being a brahmachari is only in relationship with Draupadi. But, you know, because it's a kshatriya's duty, he has to accept the lady." So anyway, so then they had a kid, and their son fought on the battle of Kurukshetra, helping Arjuna. And then he went to Manipur and Bhruvahan. Anyway, he married a Manipuri girl. And that happened. And then finally he ends up in Dwarka, dressed as a renunciate, and he falls in love with Subhadra and kidnaps Subhadra. So the point I'm making is if Arjuna hadn't been exiled like that, none of these things would have happened. And of course, his marrying Subhadra was very important because Abhimanyu was born from that. Abhimanyu was the greatest hero of the battle of Kurukshetra. Abhimanyu, he was the father of Parikshit. And Parikshit was the one who was supposed to carry out the dynasty. So you see, all Krishna has all these plans. He moves us like chess pieces. You understand chess?
Yeah.
Or checkers or something like that. Or what game do you play here? You don't have chess here. You don't play chess. Chess is a good game for the mind. It helps train the mind. It's a game of strategy. So then, I mean, even like when the Pandavas, let's say the House of Lack, okay. So there was the attempted killing in Varnava of the Pandavas because the house was made like of ghee and all those other flammable substances. All right, so the Pandavas had to escape through a tunnel. And they went into hiding for so many years. So one of the places they went to was a deep, 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 dark forest that was inhabited by Rakshasas, particularly two Rakshasas, Hidimbi and Hidimba. And what happened is that, first of all, the male Rakshasa, Hidimba, he said to his sister, that I smell some nice human beings. It's time for prasadam. Sarira, vijaja, jachindya, jayakala. So he said, go get some prasadam to his sister. And then his sister, naturally, she saw prasadam, being sane. And she thought it's better to enjoy him by marrying him. Because if I eat him, it's just only a few minutes of enjoyment. But if I marry him, it's a whole life of enjoyment. So she... You know the story that her brother came and Bhimsen killed her brother. He had a good time. He likes to fight. And then Bhimsen married her because Kunti Devi said, you know, you should marry her. She's in love with you. And they had a Rakshasa kid, Ghatotkach. So, you know, the whole thing appears unfortunate in the beginning, but then Ghatotkach was the one who saved Arjuna in the battle of Kurukshetra, right? You know that story? No, Arjuna is another story. Okay, I'll tell you the story. So you had Karna. You know who Karna is? Karna was the son of Kunti from before her marriage with the sun god, Suryadev. And so Karna was born with this armor on his body. Nobody could kill him. Nobody could hurt him. He couldn't be scratched. He had the earrings and the armor. He was just born like that. So Indra, thinking that, you know, I want my son to defeat Karna, and his son was Arjuna, then Indra came and acted as a Brahmin, and Karna was very charitable to Brahmanas, and he begged the armor from Karna. Karna had to cut it off his body because it was part of his body. He cut off his earrings. It was really bloody when that happened. Anyway, he begged that, and then he said to Karna, I'm very pleased with you, ask for something. And Karna said, I want your dart, this weapon that nobody could defend against, that would kill whoever I pointed at. And Indra said, yes, I give it to you, but only be used one time. Okay, one time you can use it, fine. And so Karna thought, jai, now I can kill Arjuna.
Yeah.
So, finally, he enters the battle of Kurukshetra, because in the beginning he wasn't allowed. Grandfather Bhishma didn't want Karna to fight in the battle, because they didn't have a good relationship. And so anyway, so Karna enters the battle, and what happens is that Duryodhana, first of all, makes a big mistake. He says, let's fight at night. Let's attack the Pandavas when it's dark. That's against the Kshatriya principles. Okay. So they start fighting, they attack by surprise the Pandavas at night. And then the Pandavas are shocked and they don't know what to do. And Krishna says to Bhimsen, call Ghatotkach, you know, the son of Bhimsen and Hidimbi. Sorry. So call him. And so they had this arrangement that Ghatotkach, he had like a bald head. His head was like a pot. That's why he's Ghatotkach. Anyway. So they called him, and Ghatotkach appeared and said, Pitashri, what do you want me to do? And Bhimsen said, kill those Kauravas. So he got expanded his body and was killing many Akshahinis of the Kauravas. And Karna was there too. And Duryodhana said to him, use that dart. Otherwise, we're all going to be finished. And Karna said, no. That dart is for Arjuna. So more and more soldiers got killed. And then finally, Duryodhana said, do it, come on, the whole army is finished, what's the use? So Karna had to use this dart on Ghatotkach, and he killed him. Of course, Ghatotkach expanded his body and killed a lot more people after he died, because he crushed them with his gigantic Rakshasa body. So in other words, what I'm pointing out is that Krishna had some plan behind all those different things. Anything that happened to the Pandavas, unfortunate, there was some reason for it. Even the attempted disrobing of Draupadi. And that really got Bhimsen angry and made him take the vow of drinking the blood of Dushyant. He opened up his chest, drinking the blood, breaking the thighs of Duryodhana, killing all 100 sons of Dhritarashtra. Even when the other Pandavas had an opportunity to kill some of the sons of Dhritarashtra, they didn't do it. They said, well, that's That's Bhima's priority. We're not going to kill you because Bhima, we don't want to break Bhima's vow. We want him to kill you. So in this way, anyway, so what I'm pointing out using stories in the Mahabharata is that whatever happens, whatever Krishna arranges, even though it appears to be really bad, you know, his Prabhupada story, Mahabharata story, there's some reason behind it. So we have to apply that in our lives too. Rather than hating the person, of course it says in the Bhagavatam, if you hate the person who caused something, you are just as responsible karmically for that activity. Like if someone attacks you and you hate them and you blame them and you don't see Krishna behind it, you got to take some of that karma too. That's heavy, isn't it? So in other words, see Krishna behind it. Maybe Krishna's behind that music too. And Krishna's saying, I have to end now. I have to practice what I preach. So, see Krishna behind it. Understand what Krishna is telling you. He's saying something to you. And then you act according to that and don't hate the person. And you should love the person who attacked. Ultimately, we're meant to love everybody because everybody's part and parcel of Krishna. Right? I mean, they're all temples of God. Everybody here has Krishna in his heart. Every animal has Krishna in his heart. Yantra Rudani Abhaya. Ishwara Sarva Bhutanam. Radeshe Arjuna Tishtati. Brahmayan Sarva Bhutani. Yantra Rudani Maya. That's Bhagavad Gita. That Ishwara, Krishna is in everyone's heart. So you're all temples of God. Why should I hate anybody? And therefore I should help you become Krishna conscious. That's my duty because Krishna is in your heart and that's what Krishna wants me to do. And like Haridas Thakur, he didn't hate the enemies or hate the people who were torturing him. So many examples of Vaishnavas, even Jesus Christ in the Christian theology. He said, forgive them, Lord, they know not what they do. So we have to be like that, first with devotees, and then with everybody. If we have enemies amongst the devotees, that's like, forget it. It's like, then Krishna won't accept the other service we're doing. If we have enemies, everyone should be our friend. Even if someone attacks us and hates us, we should pray for them while we're chanting Hare Krishna. Okay, on that happy note, that's really what's discussed in this verse. And Dhruva Maharaj is realizing that. He says, I was in Maya, thinking my brother and his mother, that's Uttana, Uttama, and Suruchi, that's his mother, were his enemies because they wouldn't allow him to sit on his father's lap. Crazy, isn't it? But it's normal for a child to think like that. Anyway, so we should understand this particular lesson. So any questions or comments about these points? Friends, enemies, how to deal with enemies. On the other hand, like I mentioned at the beginning of the class, if you're in a political position, you have to act politically. You know, if you're like if you're working for a supermarket, you have to understand how to deal with people. You know, I mean, if you just say peace and love, right? You know, someone tries to get you out of your job, you know, take your job over, you'll say, oh, I love you. Then you have to act. But internally, this whole mood, the brahminical mood should be there. Internally, externally, sometimes we have to act because we're acting in management sometimes. Management or business, for example, someone is doing business, like they're selling coconut oil. They have to lie. They say, for you, there's no profit. I'm selling you this coconut oil for my price that I pay. Actually, I'm losing money. Now, that's not brahminical, but you got to do it anyway, right? If you get brahminical, you'll lose all your money. You say, oh, here's the coconut oil for free. Even he charges his guru for the coconut oil. I had to pay him. Yes. No, that's a joke. So, any other questions? Jagajivan ki jai. Questions, comments, arguments, problems? I think Krishna's indicating us it's time to go for the job. A ride has come. All right. Everybody, to see everybody here. Say hello. Say hello. Okay, and it was, one thing was very nice to have Mangal Arati here this morning. So many do it. Is it like that every morning here? But not during the week.
Yeah.
But it's very nice. I think, you know, it's very, very nice that this time we stayed here. I think from now on we'll stay here. Even when Vrindavan comes back, we'll stay here. Because it's nice to be at Mangal Arati with all the Vaishnavas.
Yeah.
There's more devotees than Suma's ever had for Mangal Arati. And Suma, sometimes it's just me and the Pujari. And Jivanath, you know, Lord. It gets lonely there. And it's such a big temple, you know, I get lost in the corner of the temple. There's more deities than devotees. Right? And see, yeah, in Suma, there's more deities in the temple than devotees. Okay, so you're very fortunate here, more devotees than deities. That's a good sign. Okay, on that happy note, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, ki.